We're doing Ma'aseh Shimshon. We're up to line 306 in the standard editions, page Yud Zayin or page 27 in the PDF HebrewBooks.org edition. And the Timnius has been talking to deceit, to Mirma, and has gotten Mirma's counsel as to how she can seduce Samson into revealing the answer to the riddle. She is instructed to tell him, you hate me, you don't love me, you didn't tell me the riddle, you told everyone else, you didn't tell me. And when she further implored, so deceit told her, well, get him at the moment where he is most excited, at the extreme point of intimacy, and then run away from him. And that's the way you'll break him. And then she says, but what'll happen if he's not so excited? What happens if all of this doesn't work? So, at that point, they see an angel, another figure approaching them. The figure that's going to represent desire. And this is going to be a key element in Samson's life, desire. So, this angel, so to speak, that represents desire, is approaching, and deceit and the Timnis, she, together with deceit, will approach him. Kenata reu. So deceit says, yes, I see him approaching. Tedi mized, you know who it is? Hu yelita cheshek. That's the one who gives birth to desire. Kashtovi mino, yachzik. Ve'ever kvon sharim yal. He has his bow in his right hand, and he has wings like eagles. The Timni says, Yi shalom bo, may he come in peace. Ki hu yatzliach levat kol atzatenu, because he alone can make our plan succeed. Ata chalai lefanav apila, so I will place my request before him. Yachin chitzav al yeter, he'll prepare his arrows across his bow. Ad lev yedidi ishlachem lalechet, till he shoots him at my beloved. Remember, the arrows aren't harmful, they're arrows of love. We won't call in Cupid to this story, but the resemblance is striking. Ki az yiv'ar libo l'chishki sela, because then his heart will burn with my desire forever. V'im yuna mimeni agid chidato, and if he tries to withhold his riddle from me, afani achika nedod, I too will distance myself. Kasher ayati amart, as you have instructed, my friend, az achara yirdof, then he will chase me. Ki lo yuchalu kilyotav itapek min rishvei chreshek, because his loins will not be able to withstand the arrows of desire. So that's the statement of the Timnis. As we did in the past, we'll quickly read through and then analyze with a little bit more depth. And deceit answers her, Ken achoti dibat, yes, my sister, you've spoken well. Atanakum nilecha, let's arise now and go. Narutz likato, let's run towards him. Vapaim arza nishtachave lo, we'll bow all the way to the ground before him. Ki lo imna menut kol asher nishala. He will not withhold from us whatever we ask. They go towards this figure, this angel representing desire, and the angel says, desire says to them, Nashim Shananot, women of peace, women who are tranquil. Mata senafo, what are you girls doing here? So that also needs a little bit of work. Mata senafo hashalom lachen. Is everything in peace with you? Another interesting set of words. So the Timnis and deceit say, shalom, all is peace. Uvanu lishtachavot chatzvi chishken, we came to bow before you, the chosen one of our desire. Matidrashna mimeni. So he says, what do you want from me? Matachpotzna, what do you seek? She'alna ki lo imna miken asher uchala. Ask, for I will not withhold whatever I can. And the Timnis answers, Ulam tavar katonish al mimeka. I have a small request to ask of you. Halo mitzari, it's really minuscule. Ken lo timna ena. So you shouldn't withhold it from me, because I'm not asking something big. Timna eha. Similar to which word? Team neat. You'll see this is a recurring theme about mana, to withhold. What is the team neat going to do? She's going to withhold herself from Samson. What's Samson doing with the riddle? He's withholding it from the team neat. And what is Samson's weakness that he cannot withhold himself from revealing his secrets to the women of his life. It's all about the capacity to withhold, to hold on to be monea. So desire says, "Ashochal she'ali ki esea," ask what I can perform for whatever I can, I'll do. And the Timnis answer is, "Rak mimcha chafatzti ki to'oz yadcha ve'tchitzecha belev shimshon dodi tishlach." All I ask of you is that you shoot your arrows into the heart of Samson, my beloved, leman yiv'al bilabat avati sela, so that his heart burns with a love for me that is eternal. Desire answers, lechi al tirai, go and fear not, ki etzot aas et avatech amale, I will do as you've asked, I will do as you desire, I will fulfill your desires. And the Timnis answers, afani amatcha eyeh, I too will become your maid, un mishmatcha asur, and accept your commands, velo asur kol yamai netzach, and for eternity, I will be indebted to you, I will serve you, yelid cheshek tshuot chen elecha nakriv l'olamim. You, who bears desire, how much appreciation we have to you, we will sacrifice before you forever. Tzvichishkenu ashichmenu yorav subulcha, you who are the chosen desire, it will be a pleasure to serve you in the future. V'torom yadcha ken yagel libeinu, as you continue succeeding in this world, we will continue rejoicing. And desire leaves. He's going to go arouse Samson. And we have the final piece of instructions from deceit to the Timnis. Ata lo shamat bitiach ta'asi. You understand now what you're supposed to do, my daughter? And the Timnis answers, hinei shamati, ken sforot lo yida, echacha tidatech ki rabba. Yes, I've heard what you've said, and I can't count how much appreciation I have to you, how much praise you deserve. Hen espot amedom sela. I can't count it, I'd have to be silenced forever. Ki ad chunata hin lo avoa, I'm never going to thank you enough, show enough appreciation. Yadai lamo fi chen ladom ashiva, that's why I'd rather put my hand over my mouth in silence. Avodati al mizbechech akriva, I will sacrifice before you. Heine dumiyat teila, the greatest praise to you is to be silent, because I'll never say enough. Im ravuti lo tishad lo yisaferu, because your praise is beyond what can be recounted. Ki mikol tichlamod yirchavu, because it's beyond what anyone can cover. If you try to get a finite amount of praise for you, my dear deceit, it's all false. You'll never get far enough. Wow. And with that, she's gone off to Samson to start acting out on what she's planned, to bring it to fruition. So now there's a lot of wisdom in what's going on here. You know, the story seems simplistic, but there's really a lot of insight into human nature. So, deceit says, yes, I see desire. And he's coming swiftly. He's coming swiftly. He's got eagle's wings. Did you notice how desire can do that? You're minding your own business and suddenly, boom! I didn't even mean to look that way. Right? It's like it's got a mind of its own. So yes, desire is described as having eagle's wings. This whole idea of a bow, an arrow, that deserves a broader discussion. So let's begin again. The Timnis says, Yiye shalom bo'o. May his ascent be in peace. Now that line appears once in Tanakh. We just learned it 2 or 3 weeks ago when Shmuel comes to anoint King David. So then the elders ask him, is everything in peace? May your coming be in peace. And he says, yes, I've come in peace, everything's okay. When in fact he is covering from them what his real intent is. His real intent is to anoint a new king, not such a peaceful endeavor. So, the Timnis is greeting desire with the same question. We kept wondering if perhaps there's a correlation between David and Samson, the potential Samson had if this wedding would have been right. The idea that from Ruth, the Moabite, the Messiah actually did come, But from Samson's marriage with the Timnis, nothing good came out of it. Maybe Samson's revenge came out of it, but nothing other than that. We don't find any great leaders coming out of that, any children coming out of that. So this allusion to the wording of Shmuel, that needs a little bit of work. Ki hu yatzliach levad kol atzateinu, because he alone will make our plan work. And this goes back to the recurring theme that we see with regard to deceit and desire. Ramchal repeatedly gives us the feeling they're talking to him like God. And we discussed that maybe that's part of the challenge in life. Because very often when we face things that we want, we have two approaches. You can work fairly and trust in God that if you do what's right, the outcome's going to be right. Or you could say, I'm taking things into my own hands. And use the common cliche, all is fair. Oh, right? So that's her approach. I can do anything I have to achieve my ends. On the other hand, we can understand her. Her family's life's at risk. Ata achalai lefanav apila. Now I will place my desires before him. The word achalai appears in Psalms. You guys know what the longest chapter in Psalms is? The longest chapter in Tanakh.
It's the one where there's eight psukim. Eight.
Right.
Kufyutet
119. That's the chapter that has eight verses for every letter of the alphabet. And that chapter begins with Ashrei Temimei Darech. Praised are those whose path is whole, is honest.
Tamim means
whole. Tamim.
Oh.
Tamim, whole.
Complete. Is that?
Haholechim b'torat Hashem. Who go in God's Torah. Not exact. The exact opposite of what she's doing, right?
Does that have any significance with the word, like, the Timnit?
Oh! The Timnit, we assume is coming from the city of Timnat. If anything, she's like the word mana, not tamim, it would seem. Praised are those who maintain God's Torah, who think of God's Torah, who do not act in deceit, who do not trick their fellow man. Over there it says, King David says, Achalai yikonu derachai lishmor chukecha. My thoughts or my desires are focused on maintaining your path, Hashem. And here Ramchal put those same words with regard to deceit. Achalai, my aspiration is the exact opposite of what David used this word for. Again, Ramchal is maybe interjecting a little bit of humor, using the exact term where David says, I will be honest, I will go with your Torah, for her to say, I will go with you, deceit. Yachin chitzav al yeter. Yachin chitzav al yeter. So again, we have a verse in Psalms. Yachin chitzav al yeter. Where King David is describing those who act in deceit, who prepare their arrows to shoot the innocent. This is the wording he puts in her mouth. Ki az yiv'al libo, then his heart will burn. So here, maybe we'll take out Tanakh. So you guys have koach to look in the Tanakh. The book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah, what they call the 20th chapter. Yirmiyo Chaf. A little bit of background. Who was Jeremiah? So we have a very young Kohen named Yirmiyo, who comes from the city of Anatot. And when he's very young, God asks him to start prophesizing, and he agrees. And his prophecies are about the destruction of the temple. So no one likes him. He keeps telling them, things are going to be bad. There's a destruction imminent. You guys have to do tshuva. Finally, he tells them, that's it. The destruction's here. You guys are better off coming up. What they call the 20th chapter. So, Yirmiyahu's own family, the Kohanim of Anatot, try to poison him. They try to kill him. So he has a very tough life. And at some point, he tells the people, you know, I don't really have a choice here. So if we open to Yirmiyahu, what they call the 20th chapter, the 7th verse, he says, Pititani Hashem. I also need a Tanakh. My computer is not working. Okay. I got it. It's fine. Yirmiyahu, what they call it, the 20th chapter, the 7th verse. Okay? So the Navi says, Chaf Pasuk Zayin, Pititani Hashem Vaipat. God, you seduced me into being a prophet, and I was seduced. Chazaktani Vatuchal. You grabbed me forcefully, and obviously you overcame me. Hayiti Lischo Kol Hayom Kulo Lo Egli. But now I am the ridicule. Everyone mocks me. Ki Midei Adaber Ezak Chamas Vashod Ekra. When I speak out, and I speak about the iniquity, the thievery, because Hashem gives me prophecy, and it is a source of shame to me. People mock me over my prophecy. Things have gotten so bad that I have said, I won't mention God. I won't speak in His name anymore. But the prophecy in my heart is like a fire that's burning, atzubatz motai, contained in my bones. Vinil eiti kalchel velo uchal. I can't contain it. The prophecy has to come out. Even though people are speaking badly about me, it's like a fire burning in my heart. I cannot contain it. Back to the Timnis. Ki az yiv'ar libo, his heart will burn. Where do we find this term of a heart burning? Again, we find it with God burning in someone's heart. And the Timnis speaks about it as, I will get Samson's heart to burn for me with desire. Now, I want to go off on a slight tangent because there's an interesting point here. Our sages say that Delilah used this tool to overcome Samson. This arousing him, bringing him to the epitome of intimacy, and then running away. And doing this time and again until she broke him. So one point to notice is what kind of gentleman Samson was, how gentle he was. Because think about it, he could take down hundreds of Philistines single-handedly. But he won't pin down his wife and do what he pleases. He won't do something against her will. Meaning the fact that she can do what she wants with him is an indication of how gentle he was with her. That's number one. Number two, she says to desire and to deceit, I am forever indebted to you. And she's indicating the idea that he will love me forever. Well, there are a few ideas here, but one idea we have to think about is an educational one. It's relevant in our interpersonal relations. It's relevant in our task as parents, and it also plays itself out in our relationship with our wives. Let's take the simplest example. You go to the store, and it's Friday morning, you're in a rush, you're picking up challahs, and your kid says, Abba, can I have this sweet? And you look at it and you say no. And the kid starts crying. And you say, I told you we're not buying that. And the kid starts throwing a tantrum. And he starts yelling his head off. I can't believe you're doing this to me. You never buy me any sweets. And he's pouring down tears and bawling. And you cave in. It's very embarrassing. Everyone's looking. If you cave in, you can be guaranteed he'll do the same thing next time. So next time you say, I see this has become a tactic you're using. No, I'm not giving in. So he runs up to the aisle and starts pulling all the candies off the shelf. Meaning once he's learned that he can win by cornering you, by making things very uncomfortable for you, so logic dictates he's going to try again. We sometimes don't realize, but we're setting precedents that will ultimately bind us. Meaning in relationships, we sometimes teach other people where they can push our buttons. Unintentionally. On the contrary, because we don't want them to push the button, we actually end up teaching them how to push the button. And it's very interesting that Samson is going to fall with the same thing time and again. Ramchal is telling us something that, from what I know in Chazal, it doesn't say. Meaning, Chazal, the Pasuk says, she wept and she begged Samson and said, you don't love me, you didn't tell me the riddle. By Delilah, it says that she would run away at the time of intimacy. According to Ramchal, Samson should have caught on with his first wife. I'm saying this because sometimes in marriage this happens too. Men and women have a tendency to overstep their bounds. It happens in relationships. We overstep our bounds. And in order for a relationship to be healthy, when the other party oversteps their bounds, there has to be a harsh reaction. I'll give an example. You're in the middle of an argument with your wife, and she says, I can't believe you said that, and smacks you across the face. Now what do you do? Now what do you do? I say, you say, that was wrong. Get up and walk out. Shut your cell phone. Go for a walk for 25 minutes. Come back. But your walking out is one of the most powerful things you can do. Don't go away for 2 days. I said 25 minutes. Right? But the fact that you made a statement that was wrong, you stopped the conversation, you got up and walked out. Walking out of a conversation is a very powerful message, especially within a relationship of marriage. It's not a tool that should be used often. But if the other party crossed the red line, like they became violent, so then you have to react. And if you don't react, well, it's going to happen again, because by not reacting, you've basically legitimized this behavior. Case in point, we have a character here that's pulling down my signs, right? Now, it might be thievery, it might be hurting the public good, it might be a lot of things. But I knew who it was the first day it started. And I decided, he's got problems. I'm not going to make an issue of it. I hoped it would pass. He'd get it out of his system. But it didn't. So then by not reacting, I basically legitimized his behavior. Now, you come to a person and say, look, I know you're doing it. You think no one knows. I know you're doing it. And if I have to, I'm going to take you to task over it. But you know what? It's already late. I missed the boat. My thought was, how long will a guy keep doing this? He'll get it out of his system. I was wrong. And by being silent, even though I knew who it was the first day he did it, well, you just legitimize the behavior. This is exactly what's happening in the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Every time they keep pushing the envelope, they keep making broader claims, larger claims, and every time we make a concession, that becomes the starting point for the next negotiation. Because now it's normal, negotiations broke down, we have to start again. So obviously, you have to make more concessions because we walked away from the negotiation table. So this is an idea that plays itself out in many realms of our life. When Shimshon's wife can run away and at the peak of intimacy, and Samson doesn't put up a fight in a powerful way, she wins. And now it becomes fair game to do that. You have to realize that sometimes you have to react not so much because you feel you need to react, but because if you don't react, you've legitimized that type of behavior. Now, this is a tricky thing in every realm. Meaning you don't want to make every issue into a big issue, that's true. On the other hand, you do want to nip things at the bud and not let them happen a second time. So this is tricky. This is tricky, and it plays itself out many places in our lives. It could be in the workplace. It could be your boss who says, could you come in and help me? Matzei Shabbos. They're not paying you overtime for that Matzei Shabbos. If that becomes the norm, so then once a month he's going to give you a call. Hey, I need your help. Everything's nice with a smile. He brings you a nice cup of coffee. But he's killing your family time. You don't work hard enough all week? Ah, but you've let it become a norm. So you have to think about it. You might want to say, look, it's worth it for me. I want to keep this job. You might want to say, I'd love to come help you. I don't see that I'm going to be able to this week. And you might want to shut your cell phone Matzei Shabbos and not give him access. There are ways out. You don't always have to be confrontational. But you should recognize when things will become a norm. I told you guys the story when Yeshiva was teaching and got a new CEO. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He told me he wants me to run the webpage. Yeah, you remember the story? Okay. At some point you have to say, this can't be the norm even for a day. And if I let it be the norm, then I'm going to be fighting this the rest of my life or the rest of my tenure here. Back to the Timnis. So the Timnis is going to use a tool, and the idea that she keeps referring to it as this is going to be forever, that's very real. Because if she can get her way by using this tool here, then she will use this tool in other places. It's one of the things I try to tell couples, don't use intimacy as a tool. It shouldn't be a bargaining tool. You don't bargain with kids or your spouse with your love. That should be a given. And people make this mistake all the time. If you love me, you don't love me, there are all these little games and they end up backfiring. Back to the Timnis. So the Timnis says, if he'll try to keep the secret from me, I'm going to walk away just as you counseled, and then he'll chase because he won't be able to contain himself. Bein rishpei cheshek. So the word reshef has multiple meanings. Now the word reshef really appears in the Song of Songs. The love of the people of Israel to God is described as reshefei rishpei esh shalevet ya. The love is like the coals, the embers of God's fire. So the love of the people of Israel to God, vice versa, is described as having those embers. And it's also described as, that needs a little bit more work, because the word reshef has multiple meanings. Again, it can be the arrows. Reshef keshet. The arrows are sometimes referred to as reshef. It's questionable whether the root reshef really can mean an arrow, or the word reshef is because the arrow flies with lightning speed and it has that sharp point that shines as it whizzes through the air, so it's compared to a coal. So at any rate here, the question is, he won't be able to withhold himself from the arrows of desire, from the coals of desire. Notice how physical she is.
This idea that the love is like an arrow to the heart of the man is not taken from the Greek literature?
So I don't know. We mentioned before, it certainly sounds like Cupid, right? So they're going to desire. And desire turns to them and beckons them, Nashim Shananot. Now, who are the Nashim Shananot? That's again a play on words. The Navi speaks to the women who keep exploiting their husbands, who tell their husbands, you have to make more money, I need more amenities, I want to go on vacation, I want a fur coat, etc. The Navi speaks to them and calls them Nashim Shananot, women who have it good, who can lay in tranquility and force their husbands ultimately across the deep end, where their husbands will start doing things that are illegal. They'll steal from the poor, but they feel this pressure at home. So you see, it's not a new thing that women will pressure their husbands to all kinds of things. It's interesting that Ramchal calls these women who are shananot, who are tranquil. Hashalom lachen. That's another interesting term that shows up in Tanakh about the house of Lavan. Is peace with you. Who asks Hashalom lachem? Yosef asks his brothers, are you guys all in peace? Again, a story of deceit. Yosef's hiding who he is while he asks them, is everything in peace by you? So she says, I'm asking you for something little. Halomitz arihi. Don't withhold it from me. Notice the way of speech. She begins by saying, you are so great. We've come to bow before you. And what does he say? And what do you want? So about 20 some odd years ago, I had a business of jelly bean machines. When I was a kid, back in the United States. Made a lot of money, by the way. I was raking in between $50 and $100 a machine a day. It's a lot of money. If you got a good location, you can make a lot of money. The machine costs you $200. I mean, you cover the machine in 2 weeks. It's like it can be a really good business. People underestimate what you can make from these machines. So there was a store, a new supermarket opened up, and I called the manager, and I wanted a meeting with him to see if I could put in jelly bean machines in his store. So I show up to the meeting, and when I show up, he's carrying one of those dollies with a bunch of crates on it. He's helping move a shipment. And I see that the dolly, the crates are going to fall off the crate. So I come and I help him out. Now, I knew him, but he didn't know me. So I'm helping him with the dolly. I'm helping him with the crates. And he sees someone showing up with a suit and tie, showing up and helping him with crates. So he says to me, who are you? Why are you helping me? I said, yeah, I see a fellow Jew in need. I think it makes sense I should help him. So he says to me, and who are you? I said, we're supposed to have the meeting about the machines. So he said, oh, so now I know why you helped your fellow Jew. So he was right. Ordinarily, if I was walking down the street and I saw someone, you know, that's his job. He'll deal in a second. He'll set it straight, you know. he was 100% right. When someone comes and greets us warmly and positively, you have to ask yourself, what's it going to cost me? Why? This isn't happening for nothing. And that's really what's happening here between desire and the timnis. She begins the conversation, you're so great. It's like the guy who comes home and suddenly supper's on the table and everything's set beautifully and he's wondering, what happened? Was she in an accident? Did she crash the car? What's this going to cost me, right? What's she preparing me for? But this is a way of working. You know, she's coming and beginning by telling him how great he is. And he says, okay, and what do you want? And she says, okay, what I want is, notice Esther does the same thing in the play, right? Esther prepares a lavish feast for Ahasuerus. Esther is going to give him a lot of warmth that night. Esther does everything, setting things up to her final request to get rid of Haman and the decree. But she's setting things up. I mention this because it's a positive tool. It's not a negative tool. If if people were smart, they would use this tool more today too. It's one of the maladies of our generation that people think they should be blunt. And on the contrary, this is a positive tool. Why not use it? So I'm not talking about being a sycophant, flattering a person unnecessarily or when you don't mean it. But in general, preparing the person and preparing the relationship for your request, it's not a bad idea. There are positive ways to use this tool. We're out of time.